Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Jim Garrity of National Review is back with us after two exhausting weeks covering the Republican and Democratic National Conventions. And, Jim, I know our listeners and your readers are grateful for your work, and they're probably even going to forgive you for that very chummy, smiley picture with David Axelrod that you published on your Twitter account last Friday as you were exiting Charlotte. So I'm sure they're letting bygones be bygones, right?
You know, Greg, I believe in detente. I believe in mutual coexistence between the two, a lessening of strenuous relations. For those of you wondering, I did not really interact with him very much. He was just saw him there at the airport. I thought it'd be very funny to have a picture of a guy who I have said a critical word or two over the years. And no sense that he recognized me. I didn't really introduce myself. He was talking to somebody else, so I didn't want to, like, you know, bother him too much. Just took the picture, and I think the smile on my face in that picture, you know, kind of shows that the joy that he has no idea who I am. Actually, one of the anonymity is probably because otherwise he might not have responded so warm and friendly.
Yeah.
And to his credit, he was perfectly polite, and I did not want to harangue him about any of his decisions of recent years. So, but yeah, as I say, he's from Chicago, and I wonder, you know, his kids are grown up now, but I wonder if. I wonder if he has any thoughts on what's going on in Chicago this morning, Greg.
Oh, beautiful transition. Yeah, Chicago is our good martini today in an interesting way because obviously the message of the Obama-Biden campaign is that they're for the little guy, and that includes, you know, all the money they've tried to spend of our tax dollars to create temporary jobs for police and firefighters and teachers. And now the Chicago teachers are going on strike. There's been some great statistics pointed out in the conservative blogosphere that the average Chicago teacher before benefits makes well over $70,000 a year. They're rejecting a 16% pay hike here. And meanwhile, the average Chicagoan makes around $30,000 a year. So not exactly sure the sympathy factor is going in their direction, although I'm sure the Democrats in the media will do their best. But ungrateful folks in search of more taxpayer dollars could work pretty well for us here.
Yeah, one of the reasons I would nominate this for the good martini, besides the fact that I guess if you're a parent anywhere except Chicago, you're feeling a sigh of relief this morning that you don't live there. The media has not been terribly friendly to the Chicago teachers unions. They already are getting a 2% raise each year for the next 4 years, which I think adds up to something like, you know, when you add up everything else, they've already negotiated to a 17% raise. Apparently, for like 6 years, you can get up to six figures. I think the average salary is about $71,000 a year. The average income in Chicago, the city of Chicago, is $33,000 a year. This is one of the most egregious attitudes anyone has ever seen in public life, even by the standards of Chicago. Rahm Emanuel is not happy, saying that this is a strike of choice on the part of the teachers' unions. Now, choice is a really fascinating word for him to use, since the parents of Chicago schools don't really have that much choice in where their kids go to school. Illinois state legislators shot down a plan 2 years ago that would have created a kind of a voucher program for about 30,000 kids. Chicago public schools, as we know, are absolutely awful, or at least by and large, very disappointing. I put a lot of that to the feet of their previous school superintendent, Arnie Duncan, who is now our current Secretary of Education. So just a really fantastically vivid example of, one, how out of touch teachers' unions are. I think that this is something the Romney-Ryan campaign can score on. They can point out that, look, there are two parties, as Chris Christie pointed out in Tampa. One supports teachers, the other supports teachers' unions. And teachers' unions are not on the side of parents. Because if you're really all about the kids, you wouldn't be going on strike and making life hell for all the parents in Chicago today. A typical example of just arrogance and smugness and entitlement and just being completely out of touch with, to be going on strike at this point with, you know, 8.1% unemployment, 300,000 people leaving the workforce, as we saw on Friday. This is just a gift-wrapped issue for Republicans to point out and say, look, this is why teachers' unions need to be less powerful. They are completely out of touch, and they don't really care about all the kids, despite all their happy, touchy-feely rhetoric.
And Romney has been out front on that issue, not quite as vociferously as people like Chris Christie and others, but he has been out on that. It'll be interesting to see if he does go after it, how much of a difference that'll make, given how the economy and education and all this stuff is tied into the economy, but just how much of a difference that'll make in folks' minds, particularly if Obama doesn't either address it or tries to kind of split the baby here between his buddy in the mayoral seat, Rahm Emanuel, as well as making sure he doesn't rile any feathers in the teachers' unions either.
Splitting the baby seems like a very appropriate metaphor for lousy education, doesn't it, Greg?
It does.
The only folks who suffer under that kind of a deal are the kids, right?
Right. Anyway, one of the things that we talked about last week on the Three Martini Lunch, especially on Friday, of course, is the president's relatively lackluster, uninspiring speech. If you've heard him speak at any length or at any frequency over the past couple months, you pretty much just got, as you pointed out in the morning jolt, Jim, just kind of the reheated leftovers from Obama's speechwriter's refrigerator. Nonetheless, though, it looks like Obama has gotten a little bit of a national bump, maybe even a little bit of a bump in some of these state polls. He's opened it up to, in most of the national polls, either 4 or 5 points. Obama's now right at 50%. And for a Republican and conservative electorate who's been looking for a way to break away from this tie, this isn't exactly the breakaway we were looking for.
No, this on the one hand, this is somewhat expected. On the other hand, this is after Romney got such a, you know, tepid bump from his convention. A theory that seemed to make a lot of sense was, well, look, the electorate's polarized. The undecideds aren't paying attention to the conventions, and so neither convention is going to have that much of an impact. Now, this is not an overwhelming bump for President Obama, but most polls are showing it. It's moving about, you know, 4 or 5 points, maybe, you know, a little less when you get down to likely voters. But what's kind of fascinating is that this is occurring after Friday's lousy jobs report. And one of the things that I'm finding fascinating and kind of disturbing about this is that, you know, no lousy job report seems to have that much of an impact on Obama's approval rating when you look at the day-to-day tracking of it. Now, some would notice that this is, look, maybe when the media talks about the horse race numbers instead of the jobs report, that's good news for Barack Obama, that you don't see people all that worried about it or all that upset about it. Now, you know, this was a really grim, you know, it was like Friday morning, there was an astoundingly grim mood in the news media. I was over at the Charlotte airport where Air Force One was preventing us from leaving, you know, ceasing all air traffic outside Charlotte. And it was like all the air had been let out of the balloon for the Democrats the previous night. There was just no way to spin this. And yet we're seeing really no impact on Obama's numbers yet. Now, some folks like Eric Erickson argue that in a news environment in which more information is pelting voters than ever before, it takes longer for these kind of issues to filter through. I'm not sure I subscribe to that, but certainly it's a theory. I think at some point you would think the economy has to catch up on Barack Obama. That kind of is the message from the Romney campaign this morning. Neil Newhouse, the campaign pollster, it is unnerving for Republicans to see Obama in this number with the economy this lousy. A lot of people have been saying all year long, boy, Romney should be running away with this. Well, now here we are in September, and Romney really, really should be running away with this, and he's not. And so it's time for the Romney campaign to start. Whatever you're doing, it's not getting it done. So it's time for some time for Plan B, time for some creative new ideas, Team Romney. But the good news is, Greg, look, you know, if there's anything, if anything screams creative new ideas, it's the Romney campaign, right?
Well, the one thing I would encourage people not to necessarily follow too closely, and I give the Republicans and conservatives credit for trotting it out, is the Carter-Reagan comparison from 1980, in which Carter was leading at this point in the campaign, and obviously Reagan won by 10 points in an Electoral College landslide. The difference is, though, is that Mitt Romney's not Ronald Reagan in terms of his ability to connect, and Jimmy Carter was far worse at connecting than Barack Obama. Barack Obama may be out of ideas, but for whatever reason, people still find him compelling. And so I don't think people are going to sour on him quite as much. But we could still see a debate or two make a difference here. We'll have to wait and
see. And just one thing, since I happened to write about the 1980 race a couple of weeks ago, it's worth remembering that the only debate that they held in 1980 was 1 week before Election Day. First of all, that's very different. That's, you know, very late in the cycle compared to what we're going to have the debates for the remainder of the year. Also, basically, everything that could go wrong for the Carter campaign in the last, say, 9-10 days of that campaign did. So the numbers definitely moved, not just to the undecided jumping into the Reagan column, but also some Carter supporters jumped off his bandwagon and onto the Reagan bandwagon. It's conceivable something like that could happen in this race, but again, it wouldn't necessarily count on it, and it's not, you know, not where the Romney campaign wants to be with basically 2 months to Election Day.
No, clearly not. And so they're probably going to need a more honed message that resonates with people. And they may need some, I don't know, Jim, statements or perhaps images of their opponents that just, I don't know, raise questions about whether these people are really the right people to be in office. Welcome to Martini number 3 today. And if you haven't seen it, go ahead and take a moment to Google it now while Jim and I set this up. It may even be on the National Review homepage right now.
It's on Campaign Spot. Oh, yes.
It is on Campaign Spot. And this is Joe Biden in Southern Ohio. He's at a diner where he gets friendly with a group of bikers, and it looks like especially friendly with the female biker of the bunch, where she's sitting right in front of him, almost looks like she's sitting on
on his lap, Greg.
She's on his lap.
And her tush is on Vice President Biden, and the photo is classic from her expression, which seems quite delighted. Joe Biden is having the time of his life, baby. With a biker chick on his lap. Flanking Biden on either side are two guys who look like they're out of Sons of Anarchy or you know, any good Hell's Angels movie, and just glaring at him. They don't look very pleased at all. So it's almost like, you know, Joe Biden went into a biker bar and started messing with, you know, hitting on one of the chicks. Unfortunately, the Biden campaign only allowed a photographer. They would not allow any, you know, actual print members of the media. So we have only the vaguest sense of what the heck happened. to lead to this, there's all kinds of great jokes about the hands-on policies of the Biden administration, or all that kind of stuff. It is one of those things where each time you think you've seen the most ridiculous thing from Biden you could possibly imagine, big blanking deal, yada yada, he finds some new way to outdo himself. And you know, the biker chick on his lap really is a. I'm flabbergasted. I'd like to make some snarky remarks, Greg, but I think this may be, you know, the Onion has just quit resigned in protest that they cannot keep up with reality of Joe Biden.
And I think there was a rally that he went to after that where he landed a whole 700 people. So clearly he's really packing them in when he's out there on the trail by himself. I almost said literally packing him in because
literally yes.
Thursday night he had the literallys flying off script like nobody's business, but that's what he does.
There is a rumor that Biden knows about the literal drinking game. Every time he uses the term literally, so now he's actually sticking it in more. You know, so. I probably should avoid that metaphor when he's got the biker chick on his lap. But anyway.
And on that note, we'll leave it for today. Welcome back, everybody, to Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.